Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers. Additional KCRW programs and podcasts are available at kcrw.com.
From KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call it potato.
Cheney attacks lawyer. Press Corps attacks White House. Congress attacks FEMA, plus other assorted attacks from the week. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of the political spectrum and our Santa Monica studio is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the San Francisco Chronicle and editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. On the right from Washington is Tony Blankley, editorial page editor and columnist for the Washington Times and author of The West Last Chance, Can We Win the Clash of Civilizations? And here in Santa Monica and from the independent progressive blogosphere is our own Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. Welcome all from across the political spectrum across the country. Obviously, it's clear what the first topic is of today. It's been milked by everything from Jon Stewart and the late night shows in a way that has been hilarious. Even though, as the Jon Stewart show said on Thursday night, I think it was, because the pellet did go toward the lawyer's heart, they had to downgrade it. They had a color coding system on the Cheney thing where it was downgraded from a purely hilarious event to still very funny, but also kind of sad. Tony, maybe we should start with you. I know you wrote a column about the press imbroglio after Dick Cheney's shooting this week. What are you thinking about this? Aren't you conservatives just trying to divert attention from this in a way that's predictable? And that if Al Gore had shot somebody and not reported it for 2 days. Wouldn't the conservative press be up in arms?
Well, actually, John Kerry didn't report his health problem during the campaign, and I did not make any deal about it at the time. So we do have a certain point of reference. But no, I thought this was a wonderful moment of clarity for the public to see the White House press corps in full puerile infantism. They went nuts. They were disproportionate. It was the overwhelming story for at least the first 3 days over what is basically an Elmer Fudd moment for the vice president. Polls, not that I knew them when I wrote my column, but subsequent polls have shown that most Americans don't think it's a serious issue, and it's not. I was on another national radio show earlier today where one of the persons on the left was talking about where was the shooter, and it sounded like we were talking about grassy knolls and presidential assassinations. I think it's silly, and of course with all the news that isn't being covered or focused on by the White House press corps, the silliness has a dangerous edge to it. They should be reporting and investigating serious matters.
Well, tut tut. Arianna, do you view it the same way?
I don't, actually. There's no doubt that there are a lot more serious things that happened during the week. But the White House press corps' frustration and the media's frustration in general is really what happens a little bit in a dysfunctional relationship when you've been cheated on and lied and deceived on so many things that finally you explode over something that may not be as significant, but is sort of emblematic of that relationship. I mean, it's like you've been cheated, you've been lied to, and then he brings you milk chocolates instead of dark chocolates, and you abandon him. Well, the exchange between Dick Gregory and Scott McClellan was priceless. I mean, when Dick Gregory was saying, "I'm not getting answers here, Scott."
David Gregory, you mean?
Sorry,
from,
I mean
NBC.
David Gregory. I'm sorry, NBC.
Dick Gregory is a talented one.
Well, David Gregory did a very good job of just keeping Scott McClellan's feet to the fire, raking him over the coals, whatever metaphor you want to use. And the bottom line is that it was a metaphor for all the times in which he had not gotten answers and in which the White House press corps generally had not gotten answers on Iraq, on Katrina, and on warrantless wiretapping. And now they're really letting them have it on this. And, of course, there are also all the loose ends that still remain that have not been answered in terms of the discrepancies in about the shooting distance. Can you inflict that kind of damage when it's 30 yards away? Was there drinking? Why don't they disclose the...
How many beers?
No, why don't they? Why haven't they disclosed Whittington's alcohol level in his blood? Why didn't Whittington want to be tape recorded when he gave his interview with the sheriff? I mean, there are a lot of remaining loose ends. And I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of them, but...
But that's why we have 24-hour cable TV. Bob, you look... Bob is reclining in the side in an air of what? Just regret over the fact that we've come to this when obviously there's still 46 million uninsured?
First of all, I'm making a note here. Do I bring dark chocolate do you prefer?
Or
dark. Okay. I just don't want
Don't let it happen to you.
I just don't want to cross Ariana here because the Huffington Post, I think, led the expose on this. And I was happy to see it and because I remember when Ariana was on the other side, going after the Clintons, you know, she did it with the same kind of energy. And it's nice to see these people getting their due. And I think there is a serious point, though, that can be made and was made on the Huffington Post, which is the whole aura of this White House, and particularly Cheney, was that they're competent. And I think Tony's right. This is an Elmer Fudd moment. It shows that they don't have their act together. And the vice president's staff doesn't talk to the president's staff. And you can't get things straight. And they dissemble. And they're not accountable. And so, you know, somebody like, I hate to say the Bozo factor rather than the Elmer Fudd. Ronald Reagan could survive the Bozo factor because he had this wicked charm. Cheney has nothing but the aura of competency. And when we see that this guy is a bumbler, I think it does hurt. I also want to say, by the way, that I tried to follow Tony's instructions, and I wrote about the disaster in Iraq this week, which is that I'm not trying to change the subject, but the fact is that the Muslim fanatics led by Muqtada Sadr, who was the kingmaker in picking the new head of the Shiite coalition and so forth, that they have power. Yeah, so I think that is much more alarming, and I agree with Ariana, the dissembling and the lying in general about Iraq is more important. But the fact is we had a window here, and I'm glad that people like Ariana jumped through it.
Let me ask a question, Tony. One thing I thought that was an interesting observation, I think it was Maureen Dowd this week, made some kind of saucy dig about the idea that Cheney gets his sort of entertainment from a kind of hunting where you go out – you know, people who were draft dodgers themselves or chose, you know, had more important things to do than go to war, then preside over wars, which have only, you know, obviously are very controversial and have mixed success, and get their jollies, I think she said, you know, shooting birds that were raised in captivity to be flung 30 feet away and killed. Anything to that that's got,
well,
you know?
Well, typically for Marine, of course, she got her facts wrong because these were wild quail, not farm-raised quail. And, of course, they're more elusive, so it's a greater challenge to kill the little things.
I
shoot a little bit, but I don't shoot at animate objects, so I'm not familiar with the shooting ethos.
But these
I think this kind of biohistory, you know, first cuts are pretty ridiculous.
Actually,
everyone's raising their hand. Yes, Miss Huffington.
I used to be married to one of those hunting, wildcatting Texas families. So I actually called my former Texas relations, and they did talk to me. And the bottom line is that this isn't real hunting. I'm quoting one of them, saying this is Six Flags amusement park version. Contrary to what Tony is saying, they're basically driving around or walking around blasting clip-winged birds raised in pens that have been flushed out by ranch employees. That's not exactly the stuff of Hemingway. And that's really what they were doing. Maureen Dowd is absolutely right.
Well, so Tony, is that really biohistory, or isn't that some insight into character in terms of the way you get your entertainment?
No, I don't think it's an insight into any character. I mean, I'm sure that the people of all different psychological profiles, that there are bus conductors, are quail shooters, and all sorts of other legal activities, and I think it's silly to try to define a particular individual by a habit that is carried out by hundreds of thousands
of
more
people. Oh, no, we're defining him by a lot of other things, including lying about the insurgency being in its last rows.
But, you know, first of all, you know, the best piece I saw on this was by Miley Ivins, and fortunately we posted it on Truth Dig and 100,000 people came to look at it, and she made a really good point, which is that the tragedy here is that he almost killed a truly endangered species, which is a liberal or moderate Republican in Texas. And this fellow.
That's a great column.
Yeah, and this fellow is evidently a stand-up person who believes in justice and fairness and decency and even has the respect, I gather, of the Bush family when they're not running for president.
So he's a Rockefeller, Whittington's a Rockefeller Republican? Yeah. Well, that sheds a whole new darker light on it. Cheney had the motive, he had the means, and he had the opportunity.
No, but Matt, here's the amazing thing. On Friday, as we were taping this, Whittington was actually released from the hospital. And here's his statement. My family and I are deeply sorry for all Vice President Cheney and his family had to go through this past week. I mean, this is positively...
Well, that's a liberal. That's a liberal.
This is positively medieval as well as being liberal. I mean, the guy was shot in the face and he's sorry that for everything that Dick Cheney went through.
Yeah. You know, for all the... And I do want us to move on, but I do think Tony has a point about the White House press corps. I understand why this is a window into a lot of things we think are wrong with the current White House and the current administration, but it is true because the White House press corps, although it seems, you know, it's sort of esteemed, you know, somehow in at least the culture as being the pinnacle of journalism somehow really is a form of high class stenography. And the idea that something was released somewhere else and they weren't the ones who got to take the stenography and go to the, you know, go outside to do their stand-ups and say, I've just been told by senior White House aides that, you know, Cheney has splattered somebody with birdshot is something that gets their dander up in a way that is a kind of shocking, I think, indictment of the elite media culture.
But, Matt, you know, there is a certain protocol that is followed. The guy is the vice president of the United States, and there are certain protocols.
I don't disagree. I'm saying there's also a point about the White House press corps.
But the fact that as he said when he talked to Brit Hume, they wanted to give it to somebody who understood hunting and shooting. That was their explanation, instead of saying we wanted to completely manage this news.
Let me just go to
what Matt said for a second, because when I was in the Reagan White House, I once briefed, I don't know, 15 or 20 reporters on some, I thought, not terribly important matter. And that evening, Dan Rather on the CBS News reported as CBS has learned that. Well, anybody who could have walked in could have learned. They didn't do any digging. They just sort of, the producer wandered over to the cubicle where I was sitting and along with everybody else got the same, you know, silly talking point. And so it's it is emblematic of the sort of talking about farm-raised creatures, the poor things in the White House press corps sit around there in that miserable, you know, quarter, doing nothing, waiting for information that never really comes, whichever administration it's in. It's one of the worst jobs, although it's the most prestigious.
And this whole culture of the scoop, and then we got a break, but the culture of the scoop that leads different news organizations come election time to tout scoops like they said, you know, I forget who it was, Claire Shipman, or, you know, one of our people was the one who broke the news of Joe Lieberman being named as a vice presidential candidate, broke the news. But that means they fed it to you, you know, 30 seconds before they put it on the AP wire. And it is sort of stunning. But up ahead, Michael Brown fights back as FEMA is under attack. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Scheer is with me on the left. Tony Blankley in Washington on the right. Arianna Huffington also here in Santa Monica and somewhere beyond. More big news this week when Congress issued the bipartisan commission or congressional committee looking into the Katrina mismanagement of the federal response, saying that there was a huge blame. I guess they said huge blame, you know, all around. But Michael Brown, who testified, the FEMA director who had been, you know, good job, Michael, had been the President Bush's response at one point, was very clear about how he told the White House folks and he'd been left out to dry by Homeland Security Director Chernoff. Tony, what'd you make of these developments and where it puts, the administration politically, but also what's it mean for the way our disaster management's run?
Well, Michael Brown's testimony was one of those rare electric moments in Washington where everybody is watching about something actually important, and the person talking is completely off anybody's script and is just sort of speaking from the heart spontaneously, which you almost never see in this town. I mean, even whistleblowers have deep scripts that they're working off. And so he was just like cannonballs firing here and there. And look, there's nothing good that can be said about the management of the Katrina disaster. And this just further corroborates what all of us wrote and said at the time, that obviously there was drastic mismanagement and lack of communication at the highest levels of the federal government, from the White House, from the president on down. And you found here with Brown that he wasn't even talking to the secretary because he thought it was not useful. And the secretary then the day later was shocked to find out that, you know, his chief guy for disasters was, you know, refused to talk to him. He didn't know that, although I would have thought the lack of phone calls might have suggested something to him. You know, the other interesting question, there are two problems. One is structural and one is management. Obviously, the people failed at management without question. The structural question, however, is the one that it was Congress on a bipartisan basis that forced the president to accept a cabinet rank Office of Homeland Security with FEMA in it. And obviously a lot of people are having second doubts as to whether FEMA should have been put in it in the first place. And I think that's the serious question that has to be figured out. Should it be taken out and go back to its freestanding status, or should it be left in? And I don't know what the answer to that is, but when you listen to the way they were discussing things, it certainly led you to think perhaps we want to reconsider the way in which the agency was formed.
Bob?
Yeah, you know, I'm so influenced now by Tony and the Elmer Fudd factor. But it's not quite right. It's really the What Me Worry Mad magazine idea, which summarizes George W. Bush's administration. And, you know, it's not happening on my watch, even though I'm president of the United States and I'm in charge. I'm not accountable. And the reports that came down this week very clearly said it was not blame to be spread all around. It was blame from the White House on down. That's the key here, from the White House on down. And over 1,300 Americans died, many unnecessarily, after 9/11, after we were supposed to be prepared for tragedy. And this was a White House at best that was out to lunch somewhere. It was not there. And Brownie, who was applauded by the president, and Chertoff, who was applauded by the president, turn out to be, I don't know, again, is it Bozos, is it Elmer Fudd? What is it? But somebody picked these people. Somebody applauded them. Somebody empowered them. Somebody entrusted the lives of the American people with these people. And this from an administration that has claimed competency as their signature. They failed. And that failure is being marked in Iraq. It's being marked in terms of natural disaster. It's at every single turn.
You know, it's an interesting question, Bob, just building on that, because the Democrats are, I think, rightly, substantively identify competency as a huge problem sort of across the board in the Bush administration. And yet I wonder, this sort of points to, you know, is this a theme that can work in this election and in 08? It really does harken back to the Dukakis. Now, anything associated with Dukakis has a kind of halo of being discredited electorally. But remember, his whole slogan was, it's not about ideology, it's competence. And will that get traction this time? Can it? I mean, even if we think it's substantively true? Yes. Ms. Huffington.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I think it will get traction. First of all, what is significant about this report is that it was not a bipartisan report. It was an 11-member all-GOP committee that came up with this report. And it was 600 pages. And as Bob said, it puts the blame pretty much squarely on the White House. I'm quoting from the report saying, regarding Bush, the report found that regarding the president, that earlier presidential involvement could have speeded the response because he alone could have cut through all bureaucratic resistance. And that was really the image that Brown's testimony made so clear, all that kind of bureaucratic haggling and not knowing what the clear lines of authority were. And the bottom line is that it does start with the White House, and it does start with this president, whom they couldn't even get to find out what was going on. And the final thing I want to mention is that remember when they kept saying again and again that nobody could have anticipated the breach of the levees? I mean, it's once again that lack of being able to anticipate anything, of being able to imagine what was going to happen, that is also at the core of the of this administration's failure as well as incompetence.
You know, on the competency thing, Tony, let me toss into the mix before getting your response that there was, this may just be the work of Michael Bloomberg, the New York mayor's hyperactive and ambitious communications director. Tony, you may know something about that. But there was a little boomlet, at least in the New York Observer, and little buzz going on about Mike Bloomberg potentially launching an independent bid for president in 2008 on the competency factor, just to leaven the mix there. Tony, does competence...
Which party would he be running?
I think as an independent.
He was a Democrat. He was a Democrat, and he only changed the Republican Party because he couldn't get the Democratic nomination for mayor.
In the proud tradition of Republicans like Bob Dole, who when he first ran for office was asked which party he was as a young wounded soldier, and he said, which are there more of in this county? And they said, there's a lot more Republicans. He goes, I guess I'm a Republican. Go ahead, Tony.
I don't think Bloomberg is slated to be a serious candidate for president, if that's the
question. What about the competence issue? It's a political issue.
I think that obviously the Katrina event is the best example of incompetence. Obviously, we've had a debate and we'll continue to have a debate about Iraq. I think Afghanistan has to be largely judged to have been a competent, not an incompetent operation. The economy is in the fifth year of recovery. Now, I don't think any president should get too much credit for it. It's American people who are producing it. But nonetheless, 5 years of economic growth and historically low unemployment and interest rates and inflation, et cetera. So they haven't mangled the economy and under difficult circumstances. But I would make a larger point. I think that the challenge is going to be for the next candidate to prove that they are thinking seriously and forward-looking about this extraordinarily ever more dangerous world that unfolds that is not like the world we've been living in. And the politician who can begin to explain persuasively how we manage this revolutionary international order that we're finding ourselves in is more likely to be the winning candidate. I don't think the competency issue or incompetence is likely to be particularly have a lot of traction for either party. I don't think that's why people vote, once you've passed the threshold of seeming like you're a pretty credible candidate.
I actually agree with Tony. I think that Democrats are barking up the wrong tree if they want to make competence the key of the 2006 and 2008 elections, because the key issue is going to be who is going to keep us safer, who is going to protect us. And this is the one issue that George Bush, despite everything, continues to have an advantage on. And until Democrats are able to clear that hurdle and demonstrate to the American people that they will keep us safer because they have a better understanding of how to deal with them, Muslim fundamentalist threat than those who think that you do it by invading countries that have not done anything to us, especially on 9/11, that would be the winning argument.
Well, what's that going to take?
Oh, well, first of all, let me just disagree with this. I think playing the incompetency card is the key one because that's all these guys have going for them is the claim of competency. And let me take Tony's claim for the economy. How dare, not Tony, he can dare anything he wants, but how dare conservatives, Republicans, take credit for an economy that has built up the biggest deficits we've had in our history, that has an incredible trade balance, that has sold out the future of this country to Chinese communists, for God's sake, who hold so much of our paper? How can any conservative person look at our economic performance under Bush as a nation and feel sanguine about that? I think the Democrats can challenge the competency of this administration right across the board, including the economy. And I don't think they should give it up because that is the aura. That aura of competency is what has surrounded the Republicans and carried them through one failure after another.
Well, not according to the polls. According to the polls, the one advantage this president continues to have is that he's going to keep us safer. And in a post-9/11 reality, far too many voters are being driven by fear when they make their choices at the polls, and that the Democrats will ignore
I don't want
to their own detriment.
I don't want to ignore it, Ariana, but I am a reader of the Huffington Post, and what I loved about it in the last few days is I won't trust a man who shoots his friend in a hunting thing when the guy picks up his duck to take care of my national security.
But it also may be that the Huffington Post readership doesn't represent the broad mainstream of America.
Let me make one other point. As long as we're looking at what works politically, the thing that's been left out of this conversation so far is values. So when, for instance, you take the example of the vice president's hunting accident or shooting accident, technically, you have to be on horseback to be a hunter. If you're on foot, it's shooting. it's a technicality, but... So you
that's why we have you here.
There should be a little department of...
Wait a second, Tony. You mean all those hunter-gatherers were on horseback? Come on. You're playing with grammar here.
More evidence for that.
Let me just make the point that my guess is that more Americans who like hunting and generally the values that are associated with those sort of activities associate with the vice president and not with the Democrats or the media or people who are criticizing and sort of sneering at quail hunting, as we've already heard earlier today. And so that values is a key element. And one of the challenges the Democrats have is that fairly or unfairly, a majority of Americans don't think that they share a value set with the Democrats who tend to be national candidates, and that's been a problem and continues to be a problem.
Actually, that sort of emphasis on values defined as hunting and being anti-gay and pro-partial birth abortion. I mean, those kinds of values became the centerpiece of our political debate after that faulty poll in 2004 that showed that people supposedly voted their values rather than what I believe they did, which is voting their fears.
We'll have to come back to this, including to what a national security Democrat would sound like, because I think everybody, including the Democrats, knows that's their problem. But the question is, what's the answer? We'll have it soon. But we've reached that time once again for our famed end of show. Left, Right, and Center rant featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Full 30 seconds, Tony Blankley, or 20 seconds. It's your soapbox.
Well, the discussion over in the past about the Pfizer court and whether the laws of Pfizer apply to the president over Article 2, a lot of people have been arguing, liberals have been arguing, that the Pfizer court applies to this situation. But in fact, in 1978, Griffin Bell, Jimmy Carter's attorney general, who was arguing for the passage of it, made it very express this was to deal only with peacetime surveillance and not with wartime surveillance. So when people go back and find this fact out, as I did this week, they're going to find out their argument falls of its own weight.
Just 15 seconds. Ariana Huffington.
What the Cheney story illustrated was a certain fundamental trait of this White House, secrecy and a lack of belief in the public's right to know, and of course their characteristic hubris, arrogance, the belief that they are above the law.
15 seconds, Robert Scheer.
Yeah, this last week we saw the bad side of the Muslim fanatical, well, the bad side of fundamentalism, and the rage over the cartoons and the failure to understand what a free press is all about, and emphasizes that the Bush administration policy of challenging or of replacing secular dictators with religious fanatics, which is what has happened in Iraq and is now happening throughout the Muslim world, is extremely dangerous.
My pre-Oscar research, I saw the Johnny Cash biopic recently, Walk the Line. And just to testify how movies can change you, I've never been a country music guy or I've never, you know, been a Johnny Cash guy. I'm now riding around with the essential Johnny Cash in my car singing, you know, shouting out the window, I walked into a burning ring of fire. So movies can change your life, but that's all the life change we've got time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Robert Scheer, Tony Blankley, and Ariana Huffington. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is Ray Guarna. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for another edition of Left, Right, and Center.
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
For we
know we need each other. So we better call the calling of
audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.